In part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Merrillhurst University, dedicated to helping working adults revitalize their careers with 5 part-time MBAs, including an MBA in healthcare management. Evening, weekend, and online classes provide scheduling flexibility. June 6th information session, merrillhurst.edu.
This is Stage and Studio. I'm Dimae Roberts. We're listening to a song by Portland Tyco. Learn more about them at portlandtyco.org. Michelle Fuji and Toru Watanabe of Portland Tyco will be performing in the staged reading of Breaking the Silence, and that's our subject today. We're looking at 3 generations of Japanese Americans as we explore the history in a play by Nikki Nojima Lewis. We'll hear from the playwright and 2 of the actors, Chizao Hata and Larry Toda, in a staged reading at Portland Center Stage. So stay tuned. This is Stage and Studio. I'm Dimae Roberts. With me in the studio are actor, dancer, choreographer, and all-around great performing artist, Chizao Hata. Good morning.
Good morning, Dimae.
And welcome back to you. You've been on before. And with her is actor Larry Toda. This is your first time.
It really is, Dimae. Thank you.
Well, welcome. Welcome both to Stage and Studio. It's good to have you here. Now, Chizao, last summer you talked to me. It was like a whole summer ago, if you can remember how it seemed like it was only yesterday. You talked to me about Breaking the Silence, and you were performing this play in Hiroshima, Japan, for the 68th anniversary of the atomic bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And I did a little interview with you about that last year and your experience going right before you were going to go. And you and playwright Nikki Nojima Lewis and the rest of the cast were part of an all-day commemoration performing the play. And I talked to you before you went, but afterwards, it must have been such a powerful experience for you.
Well, it kind of combined 2 things in my life, my peace activism and my art, which was doubly exciting for that time. And the play itself, as soon as we arrived, we did several performances at high schools and colleges. And then we stayed at the World Friendship Center, which was one of our hosts. And then we were able to participate in the annual Hiroshima Day Peace Memorial, which was quite an experience because I've been involved in our Portland one for over 20 years. So, but my family also originated from Hiroshima. So there was just all these confluences of art and family and peace, and it was just a very wonderful experience.
Well, it sounds like it. I mean, just the sheer magnitude of it. Wasn't there more than 50,000 people there? I mean, it was a lot of the whole town, basically, or the whole city was there.
Right. For the memorial itself on August 6th, which was the memorial date of the bombing. Prior to that, I think from the time we arrived, we were busy going, you know, and performing at different places and different high schools and colleges. And then to be able to participate in the actual memorial, there were 50,000 people. And then as a cast, we were able to go to the evening memorial, which is creating a lantern and floating it down the river, which is a real ritual that takes place. And I think there is at least 5,000 multicolored lanterns.
Oh, that must have been a sight.
The thing that really impacted me the most was a moment from that particular experience. I mean, the play was wonderful as well and educational. And but I saw 2 girls standing at the altar, and it was in the evening, and their parents were distanced from them, and they were in gassho, they were in prayer, and everything about their face and their manner was sorrowful. And I wondered, how are these children being educated, what exactly are they told to have them be in this reverent moment? That image will stay with me for probably my life.
Well, you also brought Breaking the Silence there for the reading, you and Nikki Nojima Lewis and the cast. And I guess what strikes me is that that's about three generations of Japanese Americans. So it's almost like they found out what happened to people from their village that might have come like generations ago to the U.S.
And it really was that. People were coming up to us saying, you know, we had no idea. And Nikki and Kim had spent hours finding the right pictures that would go along, that would help tell the story and have the whole play interpreted as accurately as possible. So there's a lot of, you know, work that was done prior to our getting there that involved translations and images. And so it really was, you know, telling our story from the time we left, our families left there. And three of us, our families were actually from Hiroshima. So that had even more of a meaning. But it definitely was a sense of, this is our story, and this is what happened to us since we left Japan.
Well, and you brought the play to me. And full disclosure, I'm directing the stage reading of it at Portland Center Stage on May 31st. But as I got to know this play more, I realized it's really a highly personal play for everyone that's involved. And I know for you, Chisao. But Larry Toda, I want to bring you into this conversation too. What was your thoughts on it the first time you read it?
I was very touched by it, Deme. And that's why I'm honored that you asked me to be in the performance. My father's family came from Okayama, Japan, and my father was a second generation in Nisei. He was interned during the camps, but he never talked about it. I was very active in JCL, the Japanese American Citizens League. I was involved in a number of public events for awareness, but in my own family, they never talked about it. So when I read the play, it brought back so many memories of my grandfather, who came to America. He worked the railroads. He sent for a wife. They had eight children together. They resettled in Hood River, Oregon, and then the Dalles. And all I knew is that my grandfather's property was taken during the war. My father was the youngest son. He was merely 16. So he went to Tule Lake along with other members of the family.
I did not know that.
And his two older brothers served in World War II. One spoke fluent Japanese, so he was an interpreter. And my brother, who lives in California, mentioned that at the L.A. Japanese American Museum, my uncle is honored there on a wall, which I think is pretty amazing.
Was he in the 442nd?
Another uncle was my uncle Frank, but both were very involved in World War II as Americans. And this was a story that I think people need to hear. And for me, it touched me personally. You know, as a sensei, I didn't know that much about it other than my involvement with, you know, JCL. That's how I knew. And when I read the play, you really touched me because it is my family story.
Well, the 442nd is the most decorated. Can you tell us that the most decorated battalion?
They were, yeah.
In World War II.
They actually fought in the front lines and many people died. But, you know, fortunately, my Uncle Frank came back.
Well, thank you for telling that story. It's incredible. You're listening to Stage and Studio. My guests are Chisao Hata and Larry Toda. We're performing in Nikki Nojima Lewis's Breaking the Silence, which is on May 31st at Portland Center Stage at 2:30. And joining us via phone from Seattle is Nikki Nojima Lewis. Hello, Nikki.
Hello, everyone.
Hey, Nikki. Hi. Giselle's here. You want to say hi?
Hi.
Hi.
I'll be seeing you soon.
Very
how
soon.
Exciting.
You originally wrote this play as a fundraiser to help Gordon Hirabayashi's overturn the conviction that landed him in prison during World War II because he challenged the constitutionality of the of Japanese-American internment. And that was in 1985. But since then, how many times has Breaking the Silence been performed?
I think countless times.
In so many places, too.
Yes. Yes, we've had many national tours. And actually, I retired the play 9 years ago when I went to graduate school. I took my redress money, the check that came along with the letter of apology from the White House. And I retired. I was 64 years old, and I went back to school and got a PhD in creative writing. So this play was not done for 9 years, and then heard Tsuchiya, one of the cast members, brought it back and got us invited to Hiroshima last year. And the play seems to be having a whole new life.
Well,
with a great deal of interest.
Breaking the Silence, it's always been done as a reader's theater piece, but you've taken it to Appalachia as well as to Japan. We just heard from Jizao talking about that experience. And the majority of the stories are based on oral histories. Where you gathered most of these stories in Seattle, is that correct?
Well, in the beginning, most of the oral histories came from the Pacific Northwest. But what I've learned to do with all of these various performances is it has had many adaptations. For instance, when we took it to Salt Lake City, which was the most recent experience of Breaking the Silence, for the first time, you know, in 29 years, I used a local cast. This was the first time that I, you know, did not perform in that play. And I had originally gone to Salt Lake City at their invitation to put on the play. I had intended to take Chisao and the rest of the Pacific Northwest cast with me, but one of the main actors was not able to perform. So I just went to Salt Lake City to, you know, find a substitute. But the turnout at the, I decided to host a community potluck reading. The turnout was so great, and the stories of that area were so profound, and many of those people who turned out had been in camp, that I just decided to use a local cast, and I used some of their own stories, which is in the script that you'll be reading.
Well, you're very clear that this isn't a play that's just for Japanese Americans, but it deals with larger themes of discrimination, especially when you trace early immigration and leading through the imprisonment during World War II of Japanese Americans. Why was it important to trace that early history leading up to internment?
Well, because I feel that certainly every person of color knows the feeling of discrimination, exclusion, and injustice. And I think that every person in their personal histories can understand that. When we used to take this play in a very simplified form to grade schools, I would just go with a taiko drummer or a musician, and I would do a very short version of it. The children were instantly on, they immediately got unfairness. Something isn't unfair. Somebody is being treated badly. And that's kind of the essence of it. I also mean it to be a play about civil liberties. So my narrators have always been Caucasian and African American narrators. Given that perspective, the narrator is telling the story of an American story and, you know, the journey and the passages that the American dream is about, as well as the American nightmare.
Well, what was your personal history with the internment experience, Nikki?
Well, my fourth birthday is Pearl Harbor Day, December 7th, 1941, and the FBI entered my family's home in Seattle, Washington, where I was born, and interrupted my birthday party and took away my father. And like many of the families at that time, which, you know, the play touches on a little bit, the community members, the community leaders, were Issei, first generation. Many of them were taken away to Department of Justice special prison camps. And my father was taken to a prison camp in Santa Fe, New Mexico, where I now live. So it's a kind of full circle story. And then my mother and I, along with more than 100,000 Japanese Americans on the West Coast, were interned in a family camp in Minidoka, Idaho. Chisao's parents were from Hood River, and, you know, they all went to different camps. There were 10 family internment camps in all.
How long have you and Chisao, how long have you and Nikki known each other?
Oh, gosh. I don't know. Maybe several decades, for sure.
You guys go back a long way.
Yeah, I actually remember when we first met, but then I don't know exactly how long. It was at an arts conference. I'm like, who is this cool other Asian American woman in art? Wow, I need to know her.
But you have worked together through the years. Nikki, I was wondering, are there any more productions of Breaking the Silence in store after this one in Portland on Saturday?
Yeah, there's a lot of interest. You know, I donated the Salt Lake City script that I adapted, particularly, you know, for the oral histories on the Utah people. I donated that to the Japanese American Citizens League in Utah. And I'm starting to do that a lot, that when I go into a particular area where they have these, you know, stories, these the background and histories of internment, then I try to take oral histories of local people. So we have interest from Nebraska. We have Holly Yasui and I are going to write a play this summer on her dad.
Who is Minoru Yasui?
Right, and then there are, Min Yasui was one of the three men, Gordon Hirabayashi, Fred Korematsu, and Min, who as young men defied the evacuation orders and tested the constitutionality of the exclusion and served time in prison for this. And now they're American heroes. One of the activists in Salt Lake City who was in my play, who was a child also in camp in Topaz, called Min Yasui the Martin Luther King Jr. of the Japanese-American experience.
Well, it's so good that you're keeping these stories alive, and it's certainly not often and very rarely, if ever, reflected in American history books. And so I really appreciate that you've made this into this organic, living document that keeps growing and changing and evolving with every production that that you do of it.
Well, you know, it's... I just feel very grateful. You know, as a child, I always felt like I fell between the cracks because, you know, we did feel a kind of internalized racism. And I now feel that we are bridges. And, you know, this is what I tell my students. I've started a new Asian American Studies program at the University of New Mexico. And there's a lot of interest in that from students from all groups. And so whoever is feeling displaced, I just feel that our stories, you know, can bridge our differences. And I just feel very lucky to be a bearer of these stories. This is not really my writing. These are, I feel like a collagist, somebody who's tied these stories together to bring, you know, a little known history that is part of American history. So, and I'm very grateful to people like you who are continuing this work.
Well, your curatorial process is very, very giving, and you really do embrace people's stories very well. And Nikki Najima Lewis, it's so great to have you here joining us via phone from Seattle on Stage and Studio, and we're looking forward to meeting you on Saturday.
Likewise, all of you.
You take care.
Okay.
Playwright Nikki Najima Lewis will be in attendance for the play and talkback of Breaking the Silence, and that's Saturday, May 31st at 2:30 at Portland Center Stage's Ellen By Studio. And the free 70-minute reading features music and performances by Michelle Fuji and Toru Watanabe of Portland Taiko, and actors Chizao Hata and Larry Toda, who we have here, and Heath Hyun Houghton and Winnie Hu and Samson Searoth. And Portland Center Stage is located at 128 Northwest 11th Avenue in Portland. For more info, call 503-445-3700 or visit pcs.org/ blog. And this is Stage and Studio. My in-studio guests are Gisele Hata and Larry Toda, who will be performing in Breaking the Silence. And while we were talking with Nikki, you guys are kind of looking through your script and thinking about what you might perform for us. A lot of the play is collage, and so there's you're playing a lot of, both of you are playing a lot of different characters, and then there's music and there's more characters. But you do have a scene for us, and do you want to introduce it for us, either one of you? Do you want to, Gisele or Larry?
Well, this is of a woman and a man, Issei, and it's not how I originally did it, but it was wonderful the way that you pulled it all together.
Well,
I think that the
man and the
woman,
it changes
the characters, but I would say it's a husband and wife, a first generation.
So we're going to hear a reading from Breaking the Silence.
One day, on our way home from bathing in sulfur pools, my husband, a man of few words, told me he was called
Yellowface.
For a while, encountering a person who was anti-Japanese, I rubbed against a spirit out of harmony with mine.
In my strong belief, I lived as in a tower and weathered abuse.
Hardship all gone by. Now comes the springtime to my aging years.
Pomegranate flowers. America has become a friendly place.
I chased happiness and caught it. So now I can breathe more easily.
The poverty god stays with those who complain. Therefore, I'll not whine.
Small family spats, and Japan too far away to run home crying.
I'd win, of course, if we'd argue in Japanese.
Chopstick customs go right with me throughout my life in this knife and fork land.
Speaking in English, one of those things I simply cannot learn to do. It is like scratching an itchy place through my shoes.
Here, for 50 years, nevertheless, my English is a Japanese-ish.
Getting older now, happy in America.
New Year's rejoicing.
Omedeto.
Happy New Year.
They kind of grow old through that whole scene. Now, these are a collection of tanka poems.
Yes.
T-A-N-K-A. Can you explain what that is? What kind of poetry is that? They're short stanzas. There's not really haiku.
Well, I think it's another form that's similar to haiku. And again, you know, a lot of times it refers to nature and says a lot in just a few lines.
Well, I was wondering what some of your own personal history with Japanese-American internment is. Larry talked a little bit about that. Gisele, you haven't really talked much about that.
Well, I am an Iowan girl. And I always ask people, where do you think I'm from? And, of course, they'll say California or Hawaii. And they're shocked when I say Iowa. And then I have to tell the story, which is the history of this play, of how my family was relocated to Iowa. My parents were both in Poston, Arizona. They were actually married. They were in different camps, and then they were married in Poston. And the fact that, you know, people had to have a job when they were released. You couldn't just walk out of camp. You had to have a job. And my mother was a nurse, and she had applied for a job in Chicago and in Iowa. They went to Chicago and didn't like it, kind of decided, well, maybe we'll just go back west and call this we don't like the Midwest. But they ran out of gas in Des Moines, Iowa.
Oh, no.
On 27th and Forest, and they found a little apartment on 27th and then a house on 23rd. And they lived there for 50 years. So I grew up a little Japanese girl in Iowa. And that really, you know, thrust me into a long search for identity and question about identity and how I fit in and was I Caucasian, was I not, you know, and where I actually landed here in the Midwest. So for many years, I was not at all happy that I came from Iowa.
Sounds like a play.
Yeah.
Sounds like a new play.
It's a long story, but my grandmother was also a picture bride, my mother's mother. And we talk about picture brides and that my family settled in Hood River. My grandfather also was an orchardist in Hood River. My grandmother died when my mother was 16, and my mother happened to have a dream to be a nurse.
Well, speaking of plays, you do have something coming up June 22nd. What is that?
I do. It's called Jean's House, and it's a interactive production including dance and theater and art.
And it's in a house.
And it is in a house.
Where? Where's it going to be?
It's on 18th Avenue. It's the 18th Avenue Peace House, which is located on 18th Avenue Northeast in Tillamook. And it's a house where a lot of peace work takes place.
And so you had talked to me just a little bit about it, and there's going to be a lot of things where people go to different rooms, and there'll be people performing little, I don't know, like dance or scenes in different rooms.
I was mainly inspired by... through my piecework, I was taken to a house called Jean's House of Prayer in Tacoma, Washington. And when I walked in, there's these pictures and altars and pictures of a young woman in camp. And I immediately identified and I said, well, who is this person? And her name was Jean Shimoishimura. She had passed. And so I did a lot of research about her. And the house now is where a lot of national, international peace work happens through Plowshares and Pacific Life and Vets for Peace and Gonzaga University. And so it's a wonderful kind of springboard for me to examine my own story and other stories about home.
And what is it called?
Jean's House.
Well, we're going to have to hear more about that for June 22nd. And Larry, do you have anything else coming up after this?
My regular job is working in corporate marketing for a high-tech PR firm, but I did South Pacific a year and a half ago in Lakewood, and I sing locally with my vocal instructor every now and then, Mary Catterly, but nothing in the short term. But back to the story, you know, you talked about the personal experience, and my grandfather and his family in Hood River, I was told that they could only carry 50 pounds per person, and because my grandparents had very little in Hood River, I understood from my father that he and his siblings dug a deep pit because they could not carry 50 pounds per person. They took all of their possessions that they couldn't bring, coins, money, antiques, and they buried it at the far end of my grandfather's property, knowing that it could be sold. And that's exactly what happened. And that's why one of the other parts that Chisao was talking about really touched me, because it's about, you know, what you can have and what you can't. And it really stirred up a lot of feelings for me. My father told me that after the war broke out, with my grandparents having nothing, they went back to the old farmland. Now
did they dig up the pit?
And they did. It was already occupied by a Hakugina white family, but my brother and his siblings were able to go back to the pit. They dug out gold, money, antiques, and they got it back. They were able to sell it, and then my grandfather resettled in Dallas-Port, Washington.
Oh, good. What an incredible story. So you've got something you need to write.
Maybe we need to
at least
tell our stories.
A monologue.
Yeah,
you guys
should.
Need to get together. That sounds wonderful to be able to share that. And thank you for telling that. The free stage reading of Breaking the Silence is Saturday, May 31st at 2:30 at Portland Center Stage's Ellen By Studio, located at 128 Northwest 11th Avenue in Portland. For more info, call 503-445-3700 or visit pcs.org/blog. To find out more about it. Well, that's it for Stage and Studio. It's been great having you both here. Thanks so much, Larry Toda and Chisao Hata, for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank
it's
you,
good
Jeanette.
To hear your stories, and thanks for sharing them. And you do need to collaborate. So my thanks to engineer Janet Anderson. I'll have the show online later today at stageandstudio.org, as well as the podcast on iTunes. And you can like us on facebook.com/stage_studio or tweet me at @StageTheLetterNStudio with your news and updates. Till next time, I'm Dee Mae Roberts. We're going out with more music from Portland Tyco's CD Big Bang. Find out more at portlandtyco.org.
You're listening to KBOO Community Radio 90.7, Portland, Oregon. Coming up next is Art Focus. Today's guest host is Portland artist Tom Kramer. He speaks with painter Lucinda Parker. Both Tom and Lucinda are represented by the Laura Russo Gallery in Portland.
Yes, this is Tom Kramer, and I'd first of all like to thank Julie Bernard for originally letting me host this show a long time ago. She is the founder of this show, and let's all give praise and thanks to Julie Bernard, and also, of course, to Ava Lake, who asked me to substitute this time. And today, we have a fantastically exciting guest. We have Lucinda Parker, the legendary, very highly esteemed Northwest painter, who's in here in the studio with me right now. Lucinda was born in Boston, Massachusetts in 1942. She went on to go to Reed and the Museum Art School, graduated in 1966, and then went on to Pratt Institute in New York. And so, Lucinda, thank you so much for showing up.
Oh, you're welcome. I appreciate being invited.
In fact, I told a bunch of people that you were going to be my guest, and they couldn't believe that you agreed, and I'm flattered that, and the station should be flattered, too. It's great to have you in. Lucinda's had many, many, she's in collections all over the place, all over the country, all over the Northwest, and anyway, let's start out by sort of your background, Lucinda. You obviously got into art through, I imagine, very early on in your life. Why don't we talk?